Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 348 of the Roguecast, recorded September 21st, 2021. Beguiling Trickster Man.
All right, it is D&D here day here at, not D-Day. It is D&D day.
Oh, I was like, nice. What did you start?
This would be much better than storming the beaches of Normandy. There's a new D&D book out, which
you can storm the forest of the Feywild.
What have they been putting out a new D&D book roughly every quarter lately?
Yeah, but I feel like announced three before the end of the year, and then I feel like it was a longer wait for this one. Like the last one we got was the Van Richten's Guide to Vampires, which came out, I want to say 2 months ago, 3 months ago.
But aren't we having like a rush to the finish of the year where they're going to release three in rapid succession?
So this week we get The Wild Beyond the Witchlight, which miraculously...
I actually don't know what it is, so y'all tell me.
Despite the allocations that have been going on where we ordered, say, 75 of a book and get like 20 of them.
Yeah.
Which kind of didn't happen again this time. We do have like two or three of the special covers on the shelf.
By the time you hear this,
they may be gone. Wild Beyond the Witchlight is a... takes place in the Feywild, which is there, you know, their fairy realms, that kind of thing. And it's some kind of, like, tournament.
And so it isn't an adventure?
It is an adventure, but it's also a source book. That's how all those are.
Right, right. There's probably some new prestige classes and alternate classes.
Think, like Ravenloft and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or Curse of Strahd or whatever else. Yeah. So, but, this is, interestingly, I saw that all the encounters are geared so that you can go through the whole thing without combat.
Oh, that's interesting.
If you want to do an entire campaign where there's no fighting and it's all, you know, tricks and wits and all that kind of thing, this does that, which is an interesting challenge.
Yeah, that reminds me of, like, when I'll hear about, like, somebody, like, playing through Skyrim or something like that, and they're, like, they'll kind of use, like, all the tips and tricks that they can, and they'll avoid combat.
Yep.
And I'm like, that's insane. And, you know, most people are in D&D for some sword action, right?
Yeah.
But I definitely like the idea that you could pull it off.
If I can't stab a goblin in the throat, what am I even doing here?
I am there to be a beguiling trickster man.
Yes.
And I will beguile the goblin, and I will trickster him.
I see.
And I will seduce him.
You will Loki him?
Yes, exactly. That's probably a good way to pitch it, Nick, is because you don't want it to sound too namby-pamby, but if you Loki the bad guys, that's pretty cool.
Yes, if you Loki.
You rogue them up, yeah. what's it called? Wild Beyond the Witchlight.
Wild Beyond the Witchlight.
Nice.
And yeah, we are, before the end of the year, Strixhaven Curriculum of Chaos, which is the next magic-themed D&D book.
And could be described as sort of a fantasy Harry Potter type
Harry Potter-esque thing.
Yeah.
That means you get to meet the bear professor.
That's right, because Harry Potter, whatever Harry Potter has, it does not have a bear druid professor.
That's right, he's the patient professor.
Nor does it have an elephant man.
Right.
Like Quintorius.
Isn't there an owl guy, too?
And there's an owl dude. Oh, there's an owl man, too. Yes.
Yeah.
He's like the...
All these cool things that Harry Potter doesn't have. What does it have? Someone turns into a cat.
Yeah, and writing by some turf lady.
Yeah, what a bunch of crap. Harry Potter.
Harsh turnaround.
More like Harry Nodder.
You make good points, Rainey.
Anyway.
Is there another book that is also coming out?
The other one, the big one, is Fizban's Treasury of Dragons, which... Fizban is famously one of the guys. He's like a Bahamut in incarnation, I believe. Spoilers for
Dragonlance continuity.
So he's a dragon.
He's a dragon.
Yeah.
But he's also he appears as a
doddering wizard.
He's a wacky old wise man.
Yep.
Okay.
A dumb wise man.
Yeah, so he befriends the Kender guy.
He does befriend the Kender. Yes.
Yeah.
He's like one of the wizards from Lord of the Rings, like the Brown.
Yeah. Rashomon the Brown. Not that.
I think that's
Radagast, but Rashomon from Akira Kurosawa's Lord of the Rings.
The Chronicles of Riddick the Brown, is that right?
Jesus.
I think that was it.
Radagast, yes.
What were we even talking about? Right, lots of Fizban books. Right, yes.
Fizban. Anyway,
so
yes.
Lots of good
stuff. Fizban's Treasury of Dragons. People are very excited about it. And I don't know when these are hitting, if they're in like November, December.
There is, like, just in case people don't know, the variant cover we talked about, they've been putting out these kind of cool, more artsy variant covers. And that's been the big, like, everybody has kind of wanted to get that cover for the D&D books for several years now.
Yep.
And if you happen to want those on the ones that are still yet to come, let us know. We'll do the best we can. Sometimes we do get allocated, but like we were able to just squeak by and fill all our orders this time.
I'm worried about the dragons one because
still have some for
this
show.
Interested.
Yeah, Like, and the sad thing is, like Randy was saying, we could order 80 of them, and they could send us 20 or 30, and it's just, we can't do anything about
it. Go ahead and throw your name in the hat, and we'll see what we can do. Yes, and if we can't get you the, there is still the regular cover.
Which is good, too.
I was going to say, right, it's like still
the content
awesome.
Is the same. You're going to get good content no matter what. But, yeah, the earlier you can throw your selection in the hat, the better.
We also got a little late, it was on Friday, but we got the new Marvel Champions Hero Pack, Nebula. Which Nick notes with amusement, her enemy is Gamora.
Because they all come with like an arch enemy in the pack.
So if you've been playing Marvel Champions, that new pack is out. If, like me, you've been buying every pack and haven't played it yet, it's still out. We did do our Innistrad pre-release for Midnight Hunt, the werewolf one. Which means it was time to schedule the Crimson Vow, because Innistrad is like a double set.
Yeah. So that's why it's releasing like on a tighter schedule, like 2 months or something.
Yeah, 2 months
after.
Instead of three. So November 12th, we'll have the pre-release for Crimson Vow. You can play vampires and crap.
Yep.
And as of this, we still have some pre-release packs available people to pick up.
We do, and we have...
That's kind of nice to have.
We have some pre-release packs, we have set boosters, we have draft boosters. We will, as of this Friday, we will have bundles and commander decks and all that stuff too, so...
Vampires versus Lycans.
Vampires versus Lycans. What were the Underworld, Nick? Do you remember what the vampires were called?
Did they have a nickname, or did they just call them vampires?
Are they? Why did the Lycans get a cool name?
Why don't they just call them werewolves?
Because, I don't know, trademark?
By what, some Germanic folklorist?
No, Sidney Werewolf in the 1960s. He was a well-known manager of the...
kind of a sleazy guy, I heard.
Listen, kid, I got a pitch for your movie. It's a guy who turns into a wolf. I call it a werewolf trademark, Sidney Werewolf.
What was it way back when that, like... like, D&D, like, TSR tried to, like, copyright... dice or board game or something like that, or role-playing game
I think is what it was.
That's kind
you
of insane.
You can't have the title role-playing game.
They do own, despite the open license, they do own the trademark on a few monsters. Like I think the Owlbear,
Mind Flayer
and the Beholder are all trademarked. However, they must not zealously guard it, because we've got a stuffed Beholder that is not
but they call it an Igor, Randy.
Yes, but it is clearly a Beholder. There's also a Rustbuster.
I think their lawyer would be like, it is not clearly a Beholder, sir.
No, it's an Igor, sir.
Igor. And the eye stalks go up, kind of.
There is no anti-magic aura coming from its central eye in a 180-degree arc.
Also, I'm pretty sure I've seen owlbears elsewhere now. Like, I know that they're at least...
And that might be one I wondered if they were just like, you can't copyright owl... you can't copyright owl, you can't copyright bear.
Mimics. I've seen Mimics, and I know Mimics were one of theirs, too. So, what I'm saying is, go ahead and use any D&D monster you want. They're clearly not defending their trademarks very well.
They should make them call them Bitey Treasure Chests.
That was a
burlesque dancer, right?
Yes.
Bitey Treasure Chests,
yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Va, 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 voom.
The other thing is that we are doing some version of Free RPG Day, October 16th. Don't know what's going to be in. Right.
It is not as highly attended a day as Free Comic Book Day, but we still don't want to cram people in here. So it could be that we end up doing something like we did before, where we are, like for Free Comic Day, where we are handing them out through the office door. But we don't know.
Or we may set up a tent-like area like in E.T., where you have to put on a full-on chemical protection suit and go in to get free RPGs.
It's possible I might also build a giant trebuchet and fire them at people.
Who knows?
We need you to go about a quarter mile out, because that's where we gauge that Nick's stuff is going to be landing.
Hold your arms up.
Randy, right,
we're going to fire a starfinder at you.
That will be going out into I-35, so there is a level of difficulty.
There's a little bit of danger.
It's still free, though.
It is still free.
Don't give us any static, please.
Man, those little dice might go a little far.
Well, that one is in Pflugerville.
Somewhere, some poor person is going to have D4 embedded in their head. Just... from nowhere.
Well, listen, it's probably going to be an easier thing than we're describing. So.
Probably, but it's good to prepare just in case.
Yeah, if you want to go ahead and start exercising.
Start running catching drills so you can catch your free RPGs from a trebuchet TM Rogues Gallery.
We'll fire eye tyrants at you.
We have trademarked it just like Sid Werewolf trademarked Werewolf. So anyway, there's news.
I'm sure people came to hear the live comedy stylings.
I'm sure. This is not what people listen to us for. There is a sequel to Twins, a Schwarzenegger-DeVito joint from 1991?
Yeah, what?
Somewhere in that ballpark?
Yep.
Called Triplets, which is going to add Tracy Morgan as the triplet.
It's going to be revealed that, yes, Tracy Morgan is the long-lost sibling of Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito, who are both coming back to the movie.
Dave, have you ever seen Twins?
Nope.
Me neither.
Really?
Nick, is Twins great?
I don't think it's great.
Okay.
I think it's funny. I mean, right. It's Danny DeVito.
Yeah.
Playing off of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Look, they've both been in a lot of movies.
Do they learn to become... Do they bond?
They do bond.
Does Danny DeVito learn that being a giant muscle man isn't as important as being yourself?
I mean, yeah, kind of. I mean, if you
does
can imagine...
Does Arnold Schwarzenegger discover that his vile Australian accent... Australian accent.
Too right! I'm Arnold Schwarzenegger!
I always want to see him try to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
So another shrimp on the barbie, yeah. No, what does he learn from it?
So basically the story is that Danny DeVito is kind of a schmuck, con artist.
Okay.
Learns that when Arnold Schwarzenegger comes and finds him after leaving, like, a utopian island kind of thing, where, like, he is, like, the test tube twin.
He's the bad twin.
Yeah, he's essentially the bad twin.
I see.
Danny
DeVito.
I know.
It's just like, I mean, do you mind playing the deformed twin?
Danny DeVito's good for... He's game for anything.
He
I will say, it's solid.
Okay.
We're not talking junior here
all
for
right.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
So how good could a 30 years later follow-up be?
Well, it'll finally answer the questions raised by Twins, I think.
That's right. Stuff that's only been heretofore answered in fanfic.
Right.
Throwing in Tracy Morgan, though, that's an interesting...
And you know what, it's a little
like
shot
Tracy
in the arm.
Morgan, Tracy,
I like Tracy
yes.
Morgan, too.
So it's not a bad idea, I guess.
Yeah, sure.
Any more than the basic idea is...
Sure.
I mean, it sounds like one of the movies that he was in on 30 Rock.
It does.
Has Arnold been doing any movies lately, really?
Didn't he film King Conan at some point? Or is he,
he's
I mean...
Just snuck a... Over the pandemic, he's like, I just filmed it at home. I just need someone to CG some mountains in the background.
It's just 2 hours of me doing sword drills.
I mean...
Just CG somebody in front of me and they get hit with it.
Doesn't he have like a camel or... What does he have roaming around his house?
Maria Shriver, Jesus.
He has animals. He has like a zoo in his house.
Oh, okay. He's actually divorced. So.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Somewhat famously.
Also, I think
I did not know. Oh, is it like an alpaca or
it might
like
be an alpaca.
Something or like
the,
a yeah?
I think it's an alpaca.
I think you're right. When you are rich, you become eccentric and you start getting alpacas.
Weird animals in your house.
And or what's the thing that alpacas are close to?
Llamas.
Yeah, you gotta have one of those too. Yeah.
Was the last thing that he. That I remember
the
was that weird.
Thing?
No. After that, it was like the Iron Mask thing. Was
oh shit,
right,
Jackie Chan.
Yeah, but
that was like filmed overseas, right? That was probably filmed 10 years ago and just released.
I'm just saying that was the last thing I remember him.
This is probably like Bruce Willis's weird energy drink commercials from over there. It's like he's like, I never thought this would happen here.
I'm gonna say this. I'll watch anything Schwarzenegger does over anything Bruce Willis does anymore.
That's fair. Also, I think the last thing he was Terminator, right? Wasn't he? He was in the Terminator Dark Fate.
Yeah, Dark Fate.
Okay.
And he was pretty good in that.
Yeah.
Even though I felt his presence wasn't necessary.
Yeah.
They did a good job with
it. That seems fair.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it nonetheless.
Anyway, sure, Twins. This could be his last movie. He can make this with
Is
Jason
it called
Morgan.
Twins 3?
It is called Triplets.
Triplets, got it.
Because Twins wasn't a sequel to anything. There wasn't one that was like, you know, and it was just about how I was supposed to live on an island or Danny DeVito as a con man. Although, if they decided to make a prequel of Danny DeVito's con man years, I'd watch that.
The CG can handle it
now. Yeah, yeah.
Danny
DeVito's look the same. From the day he was born to the day he dies, it's going to be the same look Danny
Tell
DeVito.
Me the difference between Taxi and Always Sunny in Philadelphia season 15.
Same Danny DeVito.
Somewhere in there, though, he was barfing up tar as the penguin.
That's true. His penguin makeup days is different. I got no segue for this. Bryce Dallas Howard is going to direct a Flight of the Navigator reboot.
Interesting.
Which is a little weird.
I think I never saw Flight of the Navigator. That's not the one where the kids build a spaceship. No, that's
Explorers.
The kid, like, finds a spaceship, right?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. I've never seen it either.
Who played the kid? Was it River Phoenix or something?
No, I don't think it was. It was not River Phoenix. Explorers had, like, the kind of cavalcade of good actors like Ethan Hawke. And,
yeah.
Flight of the Navigator was just a kid, if I remember correctly. Although, it was kind of a formative one for me. I watched a lot growing up.
1986 film. I don't see...
Because that had a fun concept, Dave. It was,
tell me the concept.
Basically, this kid, like, doesn't run away, but he kind of runs away from home, finds a, like, spaceship, and it's...
Like, it crashed, like, Clark...
I guess. I can't remember, like, the specifics.
So, yeah, he...
but there's, like, a time jump.
8 years later.
Yeah.
And he's not aged at all, and he's on a missing child poster.
And, oh, like, he goes back to his family, and it's, like, the military, of course, there's an aspect of that, and the... It was
like trying to capture him.
Yeah,
this sounds like it's a little more serious than I expected. I thought it was a little bit like Explorers, where there'd be kind of like a kid fantasy.
It's got a little bit of that second half E.T. vibe to it.
Okay, yeah, where he's hunted.
Yeah, and I actually thought it was a really cool concept. Just, I don't know if I'd seen a lot of like quick time jumps of like spans for like kids at that time when I saw this.
Yeah, that sounds a little startling and dramatic.
And
does he end up with a spaceship out of this somehow?
Well, the spaceship has, like, an AI interface that's really kind of... It's, like, this weird iStock kind of thing.
Do you know who voices the AI?
I forget. Who is it?
He was credited as Paul Mall, but you might know him as Paul Rubens.
That's nuts. That makes a lot of sense, actually.
also, Sarah Jessica Parker and Howard Hessman were in this movie.
Yeah. That's very 80s.
Yeah.
Now, so wait, ultimately what happens?
I don't remember. It has been a long time since
I've seen
this.
But he gets a spaceship.
I think he ends up with the spaceship.
Oh, so this is interesting. The script of the reboot is being written by Joe Henderson, who is the showrunner of Lucifer, and also the author of Skyward Shadecraft.
Oh, this sounds cool. It sounds even cooler. And I actually think Bryce Dallas Howard is a good choice for this.
Yeah, so it's a reboot.
And it will feature a female protagonist.
Nice.
So,
for people who don't recall, Bryce Dallas Howard has most notably lately been directing episodes of The Mandalorian, I believe.
Right, that's right.
Yeah.
She directed a couple episodes of. Yeah.
And also as a pretty darn good actress in her own right.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, so that sounds kind of cool. And then there's trailers. Let's start with... Well, we're going to start with the less thrilling ones and go on to the good one.
Yep.
I'm going to start with
this is always Randy's editorialization. I agree with him sometimes. Sometimes I don't. But let's...
You agree with me this week.
Probably so.
The trailer for I Know What You Did Last Summer on Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
Amazon Prime does not have a great record of making good TV shows.
they've got a few.
They've got some okay ones.
Well, like give me their top three.
I liked Flack, starring Anna Paquin.
Flack is good. Jack Ryan.
Jack Ryan is solid. They make some people like that boring as hell Nazi thing that they made.
Right, High Castle.
High Castle, Man in the... Which is, in fact, super boring.
I watched a little bit of it. It was not wildly engaging. It was another way of saying super boring.
Super boring is their speed, by the way.
That's AMC who makes super boring.
So they do make super boring, too. They also have Fleabag, but I believe it was like... So most of their best stuff is a co-production with like BBC.
Oh, I did want to check out Fleabag at some point.
Great.
I've heard it's really good.
I don't think it's officially Amazon Prime. I feel like they got it, but it's like a BBC production.
I will say that Modern Love, very good.
Modern Love is very good. Modern Love is very good.
All right.
So they have some good ones.
We've discovered a few good ones.
They're also...
Do you think this is going to be among them?
No.
Now, Nick is, as often the case, is the only person here who's seen a movie. Nick, I Know What You Did Last Summer.
I don't know if people know this. We talk about this on the podcast, but do people know that Nick ran a video store for a while?
I don't think they do. And I don't talk about it much.
That's why Nick has seen everything.
Yep. I did watch... It did make it a point that I watched every screener we had as it came in, because we got them like a couple months ahead of
Nick's
time.
Nick's seen things you people wouldn't believe.
He's a cinematic...
I've seen a
black belt, okay? So don't even try him.
He will judo flip your neophyte cinema ass.
Yeah. You said neophyte, but I heard neo?
Yeah.
Fighting?
Yes, neophytes. That's what that word... That's the root of that word, yeah.
Yes.
Neophyte. Neophyte, it does not mean amateur. It means someone who fights with Matrix Kung Fu.
So, in I Know What You Did Last Summer, is that what it's called?
Yes.
In the movie, what did they hit somebody?
Bunch of drunken teenagers hit a homeless person and throw his body in a river.
Correct. Thingy's
and then
dead.
On what, some anniversary? Okay, last summer, so it's a year later.
And then he comes back with like a hook
somebody
cannon
comes
and kills
back with
them,
a hook
right?
So it has elements of urban legend stuff in it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not as like super inventive. I remember the original one being okay. It's popped up since Amazon's doing this. All of them have popped back up.
Who was it? Kevin Reynolds or whatever? Did he write it?
Kevin Williamson.
Kevin Williamson. Yeah, yeah.
I think he actually did do I Know What You Did Last Summer, or he had some involvement.
I think he did. I think he wrote it.
But they've all come back on Amazon Prime, and I've been kind of wanting to at least watch the first one just to see if I if my memory was
a little,
correct.
A little slice of the 90s.
Isn't the sequel called I Still Know What You Did
it
Last
is.
Summer?
I almost respect it.
And then is the third one...
Bruh, you ain't gonna believe this, but...
I forgot what you did last summer. Please remind me.
What is that, like the Pauly Shore stoner one?
But I mean, the cast for the original one, at the time, it's like Jennifer Love Hewitt, Freddie Prinze Jr.
Sarah Michelle Gellar?
Sarah Michelle Gellar, yeah. Ryan Phillippe.
The 90s Brat Pack.
Yeah. Jonathan Glicky. And Heche, which, God, whatever happened to Anne Heche.
Anne Heche shows up in things every now and then.
So this seems like a sort of singular idea, but I guess I could see how just about anything could be kind of turned into a season.
It looks like the whole thing is going to be like flashbacks to the party that they go to maybe after or before.
How do you extend like that over a season, even if it's short?
I don't know. Well, if you're Amazon, you'd make it boring. That's my guess.
Oh.
Well, who did the Scream TV series? Was it Sci-Fi?
MTV had
it. It was MTV.
And I heard it was good.
And it was weird. It was very weird. Not at all like the...
Hello, folks. Ghostface here. Hosting another Scream adventure.
It was actually just an upstairs, downstairs in the style of Downton Abbey, but they were all Ghostfaces.
Hell, if they did the flip and they did it from the perspective of the killers, I think that would be fun.
I just want to quick say, in Scream, I think I saw something, it's the first time I'd ever really seen it in a movie. There's a bit where Drew Barrymore in the beginning is, like, hiding from the killer, and she sees him, like, rummaging around, looking for her in, like, the living room or whatever. Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen the killer just kind of looking aimlessly.
Yeah.
You're always, like, the camera's, like, with them, and they're closing in on them.
Yep.
But this was meant to indicate, kind of made it feel a little more human, like, oh, you could get away from this person. Yeah, but it's kind of clever.
Not if you're Drew Barrymore.
Not if you're Drew Barrymore.
Yeah. Spoilers for Scream.
There's going to be a Scream 5.
Sure.
Okay.
Why not?
So, anyway, it might be telling that we're talking about all these other things.
Because I know what you did last summer. Why the hell are you... I don't know why you do this.
Because it's IP, and everyone wants to make the next thing that is going to capture. I don't think this is going to be
it. Why just not do the... Go and do your Beastmaster show.
It didn't look like it was going to particularly subvert it. It looked like it was a pretty sincere version of, like, yep, somebody killed somebody... That person is somehow alive, maybe trying to kill them.
Did it show that, though?
Did it show anything?
It was a ton of the party, yeah.
It showed a ton of the party and them covering their faces and kind of screams. It didn't show anybody actually after them. I think that'll be the twist. There's not going to be some... There's no killer.
There's no killer. The twist is it's even more boring than you can imagine. Yes.
I know what you did last summer. Had a raucous party and got drunk.
Yeah.
Getting random texts.
Yeah. Then there is Hulu's next thing after their MODOK. They're doing another Marvel project. They're doing Hit Monkey.
We liked MODOK.
We liked MODOK okay.
I enjoyed it quite a bit.
I liked MODOK despite myself. I didn't want to like MODOK, but it was good.
You don't care for Hit Monkey. You've probably never read a Hit Monkey comic.
I've never read a Hit Monkey
comic. I would imagine that many of the people listening are not familiar with Marvel's lesser-known property, Hit Monkey,
created by Daniel Way.
I will say probably more people are aware because they read Daniel Way's Deadpool. Because Deadpool at the time was very big. At that time, that was during, like, Secret Invasion. And
sure, it's possible.
That's where Hitmonkey showed up, originally.
Right, Daniel Way's...
First showed up in Deadpool?
I thought he was created as a one-shot character, and then he showed up in
Deadpool. No, he showed up in Deadpool.
Okay. At any rate, there's nothing I like more than a Deadpool spinoff character written by Daniel Way.
Let me ask this.
Does have his own action
figure. Hitmonkey is a monkey.
Yep.
He's dressed in a suit. If I'm going only by the trailer, which had pretty good animation, I gotta say.
He's
vaulting around, he's shooting stuff. There's other people kind of getting like the wisecracking dialogue. Is Hitmonkey sentient? Why is he a Hitmonkey? Is this important at all?
I believe someone kills all the other red-ass baboons that are in his tribe, and then he becomes a hitman.
Okay. Well, whatever.
He has the ghost of some dude voicing the ghost hitman.
Who basically haunts him or helps him. We're not sure. I will say I'll watch it.
I will probably watch it against my own will.
I think the pedigree...
Guess who ain't gonna watch it? It's Dave.
But Dave, it's about a hitman. You love hitman stories.
Yeah. Maybe I'll love hit monkey stories.
Yeah, you're all against the hitmen. And women. But
what about a hit monkey?
Yeah, they're trying to get under my radar.
Like the screeing.
I did. There is a shot where he's just like monkey screeching and just vaulting at the camera with guns blazing, but in the air. It looked like he was having fun.
Yeah,
look,
I can get behind that.
I'm just saying, can we not get an animated like Hitman instead? Can we just get Garth Ennis's Hitman?
No,
adapted?
Because do you think DC's that together?
No, and DC, I don't want DC animated. I want somebody else to do it because DC's animation is not good.
If you,
right, he's gonna end up showing up, you know, in like Titans or something.
Yeah, he
like
is.
That.
He is. Yeah. Yeah.
I want the Hitman animated series done by the Avatar, the Last Airbender people.
Oh, I like that. Or maybe,
why would it be a cartoon? Make it an actual thing.
Get Kripke from The Boys and make Hitman.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. You need to see people chain smoking and just knocking back beer after beer after beer. Yeah. That's the only way that it'll work.
I'm just saying the animated part with the whole undead zombie things, and I think it would be more fun.
Anyway, between, as I say, I did arrange these in order. So,
right.
Hitmonkey, slightly better than I Know What You Did Last Summer.
I think that's true. It at least felt like I understood what it was about, or like I kind of got a vibe.
Yeah.
I Know What You Did Last Summer, and we kind of don't know what's happening yet.
No.
All right, are we about to hit the good one?
Let's talk West Side Story.
All right.
Steven Spielberg's big budget reimagining of a Broadway and movie classic.
You know, these things always come prepackaged with pushback because, A, why remake a classic?
Yep.
And the quick answer to that is probably because it had a bunch of people in brown face.
That's why you remake the classic. Yep.
Yeah.
It's a real easy answer this time.
Right. Super great movie, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I watched it recently. It's really good. It's just, look, you got to squint and not remember that it's a bunch of white people playing Puerto Rican.
Right. Also, you know, sometimes... when you've got somebody of Spielberg's caliber, you may be able to do a remake that's worth it.
And the tech, like, you and I went and saw In the Heights.
Yes.
And it was fantastic.
Absolutely.
And I think there's something to be said for technology moving forward, not just, I mean, cameras, costuming, everything. Mm-hmm. This looks spectacular. It calls back all the West Side Story stuff you like in the original, but the original was filmed a long time ago and looks a little cheap by modern day blockbuster standards.
I think that it actually had like cinematic techniques that were like so kind of ahead of the time that to me it still feels pretty modern.
It's really good.
But yes, it can, you know, if you want to speak to a new audience, then they're as long as it is not like a cash grab, as long as it's not a trashy thing,
right?
And you know Spielberg's not doing that. He's in love with this movie, and like it's written all over the trailer. This is a really good trailer that has a lot of emotional beats. Shows some dialogue, kind of gives you the sense of the story if you don't happen to know it.
Yeah.
It's, you know, very much a New York. I think everybody knows this, but like a New York fifties New York gangs version of Romeo and Juliet.
Yep.
With like racial tensions built into it, and. A lot of, you know, like a lot of musicals, like these just some really, really inventive songs that are both like satirical songs, like America, that like walk this line, these great lines and like super clever lyrics. And it actually has some of like the, so like cool, like you didn't see as much of this in the trailer, but there's great dance choreography in it. It sort of like had something that was, you know, something I think would have been hard to kind of imagine that first time, which is these tough gangsters, right, who are going to, like, have, like, rumbles and kill each other occasionally, also doing sort of ballet-type moves.
Yep.
And that is not an easy thing to pull off. This trailer, I think, showed me all of the sort of glimpses of all of the best qualities of the original. But, yes, it did feel like there was something modern about it. And I think fans of it, I think, should give it the benefit of the doubt.
I'm actually very excited about this. This looks really
good. I've been kind of excited from the first time I heard about it. Now, Spielberg, I think we'd all agree, maybe has not been like at his like A-est of A-games for a decade or two.
But he still manages to come through sometimes.
This is kind of an interesting one because it's a remake project, and that's something he doesn't really do.
Yeah.
Is there any other remakes he's done?
I don't know.
I can't think of any, Nick.
I feel like there has been.
I feel like he has.
I'm just a Neo fight.
Fight!
So that'll be an interesting question in and of itself.
Yeah.
People need to embrace more of the musicals. They're good.
They should. Musicals are good. Musical fans.
I'm on the fence of... I understand why there needs to be a remake because of problematic stuff.
We got a naysay.
I would have preferred new material. Like...
East Side Story.
No, I just don't know if this needs to be...
But here's the thing. Consider what it embodies right now.
There is
a new era of racial tension in America, fomented, by the way, by right-wing scumbags.
Yeah.
And but it, like it or not, it is there. And I think it is a good time to reflect on one of the best stories that we have that talks about the, you know, kind of race in a way that is relatively charitable to both participants in this racial struggle. in the story. So
also, what do you mean? You want like a new musical or something?
Yeah, I'd rather have something more.
You'd rather Spielberg be doing just a new musical.
Yeah,
I don't know. I feel like there's a reason these are classics. Like you're not going to get something as good. You don't want like like Grease 2 of West Side. I like Grease 2. Let's be clear, but we don't like West Side Story 2 about.
But even
about
Grease 2 wasn't retelling the original Grease. It was
Nick, you would mean like a completely new musical.
Yeah.
Right?
Do you mean like finding something else on Broadway and filming it, or you mean?
Yeah,
like
I just like. I don't know. I just.
Do you feel that they shouldn't be touching something as classic? Because this is like generally like the original is, but for many people would be considered a 5-star.
Yeah, I guess I'm more leaning towards that because I'm like,
it'd be like remaking Casablanca, and you'd be like, oh well, Spielberg's a really good filmmaker, but like Casablanca's Casablanca.
But have you guys seen my script for a cyberpunk Casablanca? Because I think. Really, it's genius.
You know, that movie has been reinvented so many times, not as Casablanca, but as other properties, that it is like Rashomon and stuff
but
like that.
Like
mine is actually called Cyberpunk Casablanca. It stars Neophyte.
Oh. all right, so we've weighed in. We'll find out when it's released.
The only,
Nick, are you going to see it?
Probably not. Oh. The only remake I think that
Nick is going to watch the new I Know What You Did Last Summer TV show. He's not gonna see
West Side Story.
No, I mean I'll probably watch it, but I'm not gonna rush to the theaters. I'm not rushing to the theater to see anything at the moment.
That's fair.
And I think the only remake that he has done, or one of the ones, is War of the Worlds. I know that's been made
which I liked.
I like the first 45.
Yeah, that's true.
Like,
it doesn't hold up great, but the opening stuff is great.
Right, and there's good bits later on.
Yeah.
But yes, it does kind of fall apart a bit.
But yeah.
All right. Anyway, that's the news for the week. We'll be back in just a second to talk about comics. We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, September 22nd. And I think the big news is that Last Ronin number 4 is this week.
Yep.
So if you have been waiting for that... penultimate issue of the Future Turtles.
Yeah, we're closing in on it.
Yep.
We are at the penultimate issue, and we're closing in on the ultimate issue. So
when this is all said and done, will it be a year and a half? Will it not quite make the Doomsday Clock 2-year mark?
Oh, I don't know.
Doomsday Clock was 12 issues, by the way, so I guess that's not a fair comparison, but...
But, you know, I guess nobody's really complaining. I think people are still enjoying the ride.
Yeah.
A little bit of wear, a little bit of exhaustion from the long waits, but it's kept them going through the pandemic. They need to know about an ancient turtle.
Yeah, maybe when the final issue of Last Ronin comes out, the pandemic will magically end, and we will find it was all marketing.
Thanks, Shredder.
Yes, the Shredder did it. Actually, weirdly, it was Splinter.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Batman Fear State kicks into gear this week. There are three different issues out. There's the Batman issue. There's the Batman Secret Files Miracle Molly, which gives the secret origin of the head of the
character.
Unsanity Collective.
Yep.
And then Nightwing joins the fray with a new artist. Tom Taylor's still writing. We all love Nightwing. It's, I don't know, is it fair to call it a favorite book?
I'd say, at the very least, I'm going to say favorite superhero book going right now, maybe.
But it's pretty good. And we were worried about Crossing Red of Fear State, but I thought they did a good job with it.
Yep.
And the Batman issue of Fear State has him teaming up with Ghostmaker, another Tinian creation. Continues to have that really nice art by Jorge Jimenez.
You know, when I was reading through that, Randy, I was like, a lot happens in that issue.
Yeah.
Like, I feel a good deal of plot moves forward in that Batman, and things are revealed about Ghostmaker and Scarecrow and the big plot and stuff like that. It just felt like a lot happened in it.
I agree.
Like, if you're following Fear State, it does seem like it's moving forward in leaps and bounds.
Yeah, it's definitely not slow. It's Tinian sort of wrapping up his career with a bat, or his career.
His bat his, career.
His bat career.
Yeah.
I mean,
what do you know that we don't, Randy?
He's going over to do newsletter comics, so he's dead to me now.
That's true.
So it's at the end of his career. There's also a couple of aquatic-themed comics from DC this week.
Yes, there are.
Are there?
Aquaman,
I know of one.
Aquaman the Becoming.
Yep.
Which is the new Aquaman. Is he Arthur's son?
He's not.
Okay.
It's the same... Isn't this the kid from Young Justice?
No, I don't think it is. I get somebody else. It's not Calder, right?
It's not Calder. Yeah, this is...
It's a new character who showed up in Future State.
Ah, okay. Yeah. All I kind of needed to know for this, and all you the reader need to know, is that Aquaman is training him. He's clearly like a protege where he's like, you are going to be the next Aquaman.
Okay, yeah. All right.
And like, no joke about it. And so that, like, early on he's running like this sort of VR campaign in this kind of like this pool that kind of does like their underwater VR stuff.
That, of course, Batman created.
Batman trained there. I don't know if he actually programmed.
He created the simulation that this new Aquaman was in.
Yeah, and he's like, but to some degree, early on, he's kind of like, things are going right. Like, he's training pretty well, going through this tough apocalypse program. Seems like he's pretty good friends with Aquaman and Mera, and
friends with all the Titans.
Friends with the Titans, right? He's like, is he a trainer with them, or is he part of the class?
No, I think he's one of the... I thought he was one of the class, but it seems to be one of the teachers.
Okay. And he's got a good friendship going on with his mom, who he's hanging out with the diner, while, because he's gay, he's kind of, like, flirting with the waiter dude.
Yep.
And then, like, sort of things come down to smack him down with some Atlantean... Atlantean stuff going on. I don't actually know who the antagonist is yet.
No.
But they've kind of got that cool, like, clearly inspired by the Aquaman movie, that Atlantean armor that you walk around with on the surface with.
And some really good art in there, too.
Yeah, it's a good... there's a big, good throwdown fight in there. He kind of moves with, like... It looks like he's doing martial arts moves while he's doing aquatic stuff. Yeah. But I like the character.
And
so.
Randy, I think the other aquatic themed one you're talking about indeed. Is Suicide Squad King Shark.
Yep, this was there's a free comic day offering, but this is a mini series.
Yeah, it's a 6-issue mini series focusing on King Shark, written by Tim Seeley and art by Scott Collins.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It basically is talking about King Shark's heritage, where he came from, sort of the
like a shark god.
He is a shark god, yes, and the sharks need him again. There's also some orca action in here.
Doesn't he get, like, just reading about it, it sounded like he was in some sort of fight contest. Like a Mortal Kombat of sharks or something? I don't know. When I say sharks, of course mean shark men.
And there's some Suicide Squad stuff in here as well. And then, something else towards the end, which I'm not going to spoil, but there's a nice guest spot of a character I haven't seen in a little while.
So if you're vibing on aquatic characters, Suicide Squad stuff, or you're a general shark fan...
If you liked King Shark in the movie.
If you like King Shark Suicide in the movie.
Squad, then.
But I see he's all ripped and swole on this, and not the tubby King Shark that people love. The dum-dum King Shark.
Hand.
Yes, that one.
Yes, this is... This is ripped King Shark.
Yeah, he's been working out.
He's still eating people, though, so I can never take that.
That's all I ask.
Image has a new book called Frontiersman that is sort of an ecological superhero who's retired.
Yeah, he's kind of got to get pulled back into the fold. He's off living in the woods. Someone's kind of trying to recruit him.
It reminds me of a more serious shirtless bear fighter.
I was going to say, it does have that vibe to it, but it's not quite as wacky.
Because it takes place in a world where there were a lot of ecological superheroes.
Yeah, yeah.
And about this one who retired in the middle of a forest where no one can find him.
Yeah.
And somebody's trying to bring him back into kind of the new world to sort of be their spokesperson in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
It was an interesting idea. I think it's executed pretty well. I thought the art was
fun. It's got a little bit of a rough and tumble vibe, like a little bit of that, guy living in the woods.
Yep.
But there was like a joke about the Unabomber, but like he kind of comes off as like kind of a, Wolverine type, that kind of like a tough woodsman. And there was a bit of world building. You see flashbacks to his superhero days and stuff like that.
Yeah, there's a backup that has like a character thing that's feels very pulled from the original Marvel.
It's a straight up Marvel Universe ripoff. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Focusing on one of the characters from the past, and
anyway, kind of an oddball, but pretty. It's sincere, I think, under the action adventure tropes.
Yeah.
Yep.
The death of Doctor Strange. Number one, this is a story about the death of Doctor Strange.
I think this, out of everything this week, was my favorite book.
I really enjoy it. So it's written by Jed MacKay.
Yeah.
Who I quite enjoy. And who's been doing Black Cat and
Moon Knight.
Moon Knight, yeah.
But this
which also has an issue this week.
But basically, this first issue opens up with the day in the life of Dr. Stephen Strange.
Yes, and his ghost dog.
And his ghost dog was at Bats.
Bats.
Bats. And I had completely forgotten that at some point over the past couple of years, he had his hands back.
That was, yeah, Mark Waid did the thing where he became a surgeon again. I like this intro back into Doctor Strange where they sort of, like, they reframe a lot of stuff that Jason Aaron and Mark Waid did as they sort of changed Doctor Strange's goals.
And Donny Cates?
And Donny Cates, you're right. Sort of a, that the Sorcerer Supreme, like, what his actual role is, and, you know, why the Sorcerer Supreme is different than any other magician.
Yeah.
And they touched on Strange Academy.
I was going to say, there's many facets of his being in this, because he is a teacher, is a superhero.
It's a good catch-up on the status quo of Doctor Strange in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah. I think y'all would probably say that anybody who kind of has, like, even a vague interest in Doctor Strange, it sounds like this would probably kind of get him up to speed on what's up with his world, other than him becoming deceased.
It's a weird thing to call the death of Doctor Strange, though, because even though that does happen, this very much does feel like a Doctor Strange number one. Maybe it's just because they've done enough of those lately, they wanted to give it something, but, like, this does not feel like a, like, you have to have been reading Doctor Strange for years.
No.
This is a good try. If you wanted to like the character, you want to try it out, this is a good creative team and a fun take on the character.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
Worth mentioning the art is by Lee Garbett, who also did Shadecraft.
Yeah.
And Skyward, and is really good. So, yeah. I dug it. And the last page twist is indeed pretty good. There's also X-Men Onslaught Revelations, which I think is the other epilogue to Way of X?
Yeah, it's tying in, because this is still... why am I blanking?
Cy Spurrier, right?
Yeah, Cy Spurrier. Yeah. Yep, dealing with the fallout of that. I have not had a chance to read it, but it does have Kurt in a new outfit that looks really cool.
The weird thing is, this is such weird branding for Marvel, because a lot of people really liked Way of X, and I've had numerous people say, oh, it's too bad that ended, and I'd be like, oh, no, actually, it's the same creative team as doing these Onslaught one-shots, but I think it's like, they rebranded an attempt to get new people, and they lost all their old people.
A little bit.
It's a very strange thing to do.
But I thought they were going to do that whole series of mini-series with that one. Like, Way of X is going to do 6 issues, and then a couple of interstitials, and then he's coming back for season 2 thing.
Yeah.
We'll see if that actually happens, but...
Yeah. Also, a couple trades this week. Swing Volume 4, the naughty book from Top Cow...
About a swinger couple,
Has a crossover with Sunstone characters this time out.
Sunstone, of course, which has been a big one over the last few years. I'm trying to think, if you were to sum up Sunstone, is that about polyamorous people?
What? Sunstone's kink is like BDSM stuff.
Oh, that's right. I couldn't quite remember what... Because they have like their own like kinkiverse.
Yes, yes.
But I've read one or two of the Swing ones, and it was actually really good.
I actually really like it, and it's a fun relationship book with a lot of sex in it.
We've kind of talked about it before, where it's, you know, it kind of has some of the vibe of the old, like, what do you call it, Strangers in Paradise, which is to say it's mostly, like... character stuff, but yes, there's some kinky naughtiness in there too. So recommend it.
Also, the first half of Gideon Falls, the horror series from Lemire and Sorrentino.
Yeah, they're kind of suspense. I want to say sort of suspensey horror in that kind of bit Twin Peaksy way.
It gets a swanky hardcover that collects the first 16
it's
issues.
Nice looking.
So I'm finally gonna get. I've read I think the first trade worth, and I need to dig back in because I actually really like that first trade. So. I'm going to give this hardcover a look. If you, like me, or one of these people waits for the fancy hardcovers, the time has come. I also, stuff that came out this week, as mentioned, there was a Moon Knight number 3, Batman the Detective, the penultimate issue of Tom Taylor's Batman in Europe adventure, Gamma Flight has a 4th issue, Radiant Black, the sort of Power Rangers superhero-y riff from Image, Chew, the sequel to Chew, and then an issue of Black Hammer Visions, which is their Western character, as done by Scott Snyder this time out. What else is on the stacks for everybody?
For me, it's the X-Books, so X-Core. We talked about Onslaught Revelations. There's also X-Men number 3, which sees a guest spot from the High Evolutionary. And I feel like there was one more. Oh, X-Men Legends, which is the first part of the Larry Hama and Billy Tan story about Wolverine and Jubilee.
That was going back to his Wolverine stuff.
Yep.
Okay. Is LCD in it?
I did not see LCD when I was flipping through it, which I was a little sad by. Lady Deathstrike appears.
Oh, okay. All right.
Randy, did you mention the Star Wars Adventures Ghosts of Vader's Castle?
I did not.
It's the third in the miniseries, each of which has been an anthology format of, like, sort of spooky Star Wars stories told on the outskirts of Vader's, you know, fortress citadel on Mustafar.
Right, right, right.
So this is going to be the final miniseries about that. And I haven't read it yet, but there was an issue 7 of Alien is the start of a new storyline. So if you've been curious to check out what Marvel's doing with the Alien stuff,
I'm sure that's an alt cover, but I love that cover.
It is a very weird and creepy cover because what it shows is a, like, just a quick glance, almost an idyllic-looking barn with fireflies around it and, like, cattle and stuff. And then you see these silhouettes of aliens on, like, the, what do you call it, a grain silo?
Yeah,
on top of the roof of it, and you're like, oh, that's
creepy.
It's just
a really striking...
Like, that's not good.
Yeah, it looks like it's at twilight, too, like, where you could, you know, maybe just miss that there's xenomorphs moving around in the fields.
Yep.
I think that's everything I got.
It's not a good thing to miss.
No. For sure.
All right. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk about a comedy special that Dave recently watched, that I have also watched, and also a little more Septober. All right, we've got more September check-ins. Nick, in particular, has been watching more horror movies than the rest of us.
Yep.
But before we get to that, Dave had a chance to watch Bo Burnham's Inside.
Right. This was like all the buzz of my friends about 2 months ago.
Yeah.
Like, they wouldn't shut up about it.
No.
You wouldn't shut up about
it. That's correct.
Anna wouldn't shut up about it.
Yep.
Shireen wouldn't shut up about it one
time. And you know why? Because it's good.
It's really good. So I am a person who has not particularly followed Bo Burnham, who I think kind of came up out of YouTube celebritydom and stand-up comedy and stuff.
He's kind of a young guy, and he did comedy. He also did this movie Eighth Grade, which I heard good things about.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I believe he is only now, like, which is, it's actually a kind of point in the comedy special, turning 30.
Yep.
So he's a young success. He maybe isn't the happiest of men.
He's an ingenue.
Like a lot of comedians, there's a lot of pain underneath, and this is a special that he did during the pandemic, and that's why it's called Inside. It is all filmed inside, like, his own studio and stuff.
Yep.
He literally, like, set up all the cameras. You actually see there's shots of shots, so you get a little sense of process in it.
Yeah.
And you'll see all this junk lying around on the floor that's all the, you know, the basically the film equipment and stuff. And he'll kind of show outtakes and things in between it. This is, from what I have understand, though, kind of a change in his style of comedy. I've seen some of his little bits and pieces of some of his stuff before, and there's, like, satirical elements. He's had some, you know, darker humor. But this is, like, has to be the darkest of the dark.
Yeah.
Because in addition to, like, opening up talking about, like, suicide and things like suicidal thoughts, the songs and stuff in it, because he's, like, does musical comedy. That's the, I don't know, I think that's primarily his thing.
He plays several instruments.
Yeah, he's clearly a talented musician.
and filmmaker. And, like, we talked about this, like, doing this all by yourself, there's, like, lighting and camera moves. And, like, it's impressive.
And, like, some of the stuff that they kind of ease you into with before, it gets pretty serious pretty fast, but there's also, like, hysterically funny stuff.
Yeah.
But, like, one of the early songs he does is a song about trying to do a Zoom call with his mom during the pandemic.
Yep.
And it is hysterical. He, you know, talks about her, you know, not being able to keep the phone more than, like, a foot from her face.
Yep.
And endlessly trying to talk her through it. And it's just a good capture of that frustration that I think... I want to say a good half of us had to have had in some way, shape, or form throughout the pandemic, trying to teach somebody, whether it's your mother or anybody else, how to use Zoom or FaceTime. I guess it was probably FaceTime in this.
There's also a lot of songs about feeling bad, where he sort of riffs on, like, club tropes and that kind of thing. But
yes.
And then there's a weird song about Jeffrey Bezos.
I want to say the signature song of it has to be the How the World Works.
Or Welcome to the Internet.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Those are the two big ones, I think.
The How the World Works, like, you really have to see this to get the impression. And you can just, like, type in Bo Burnham, How the World Works, and watch it on YouTube.
It's a little 5-minute clip. It's worth watching.
And if you like it, just go and watch the special.
Yep.
But it is a thing that bounces between a sort of almost Mr. Rogers type, very buoyant, Disney-ish type song about, like, the kind of way you would might want it to work. And a little sock puppet of his named Sacco, who comes up to say, no, that's not right. This is how it works.
And he's very woke, the sock puppet.
And the violent sort of exchange that ensues.
Yeah.
It's super good. A little shocking, like, at times, and really funny. What else is in there? Oh, right, man. There's one. White woman's Instagram. You know, I cannot say it's good comedy. Let me recite a joke from it. Just go watch one or two bits from it.
Just watch it.
And it is one of those ones that's it kind of stands as a work of art because it is a meditation on, I think, the pain that a lot of people have felt throughout this pandemic. He's very self-aware, I think, of that he's kind of privileged.
Very much so.
Like a lot of his songs kind of take that into account. It seems like he's also a guy who had taken a break from doing stand-up and was kind of, you know, working to make himself a better person, and it seems like he kind of went through some therapy and some other stuff and kind of did come out better, but then the pandemic happened and he wasn't able to go back and do stand-up yet.
Right.
So he's got, like, that particularly kind of compounding things, and it's interesting because this is one of those comedy specials where you get some life story stuff.
Yeah.
Not a ton of it. It's mostly kind of conceptual songs, but it is built into it. Anyway, I think, he was kind of off my radar, except for the occasional thing that someone would put in front of me until this. But I really recommend people check out this special if you check out nothing else from him.
I told you.
All right, you were right, and all my friends were right.
Yes.
What I did find interesting, and particularly I think among the millennial crowd friends, is that I would see people talking about watching it over and over.
Yeah.
That it was dark but cathartic to them. Yeah. And I just think that's an interesting place for it to land.
Yeah.
Anyway, what else we got?
Nick, tell me about Killer Pants.
So, yes, I got told about this movie a few weeks ago. So, a friend of mine said it was hitting Shudder, and he was very excited. I couldn't understand this excitement because it is about a movie about killer pants.
Yep, sure.
It is a movie called Slacks, SLAXX.
Oh, my. By the way, there was a movie about a killer tire years ago.
Yeah, called Rubber.
And there was Attack of the Killer Tomatoes in, like, the 60s and stuff.
So this kind of follows on that.
There's an awareness of ridiculous horror movies.
This one is interesting. It's got more of a message than I was expecting about consumerism and those companies that say they're woke and are better than everyone.
It's another kind of branding
thing. Yeah, it's like a branding tool kind of thing.
Real cynical.
So I was kind of impressed that it had a little bit more to say about...
I wouldn't have guessed it had anything to, so that's good.
But it does feature Slacks killing people.
Does it, like, wrap around their throats and stuff?
Yes, they're sentient pants, and some will, if you put them on, they will crush your torso into nothing. They're also will
strangle. That actually sounds horrible.
Yeah. It was awful.
They kind of shit. Like, the 1980s remake of The Blob is a rather gory movie. But it's like kind of like the gore in it makes me maybe like laugh at how over the top it was. Does this have like comical violence or are you actually like wincing?
A little bit of both. I mean, on its surface, it knows what it is. It's being humorous.
It's not an archly serious movie about sentient slacks.
The undercurrent of saying something is there, but they have to wink and kind of smile at it a little bit.
Can you say how the pants come to life and kill people?
That is actually a big kind of
reveal
that I don't want, because it is actually
150 years ago, Jonathan Levi buried a pair of pants on an Indian burial mound.
This features no actors you probably will have seen.
It's a Shudder movie, you said.
It's a Shudder movie. I know. I think it was produced in like Canada, Toronto.
Canadian Killer Pants, sure.
It was interesting. I would suggest watching it because it is a very short movie. It's like 70 minutes.
Okay.
So it's kind of in and out.
All right.
It was enjoyable.
That sounds like the best you could hope for with the sentient pants movie.
Yes.
You also said you watched Nightbooks on Netflix, which is... Netflix is dropping new horror movies on Wednesday.
And this is the first one. It's directed by David Yaroveski.
I don't know who that is.
Dave will know only because he did the movie Brightburn.
Right? Which I did not care for.
Not care for. I thought, even though it was a despicable idea, there were moments in there that I thought were well done. This movie is a little bit more... it's a lot better. It's still got some of the darkness in it, but it is also kind of playing off of, like... it's got a more humor bent to it. It's about a kid who is, like, in love with the horror genre, which I can kind of...
When you say kid, we're talking 10, 15?
Yeah, like 10 years old.
Okay.
basically getting, he writes scary stories, and then at one, the movie opens with him wanting to destroy all of his stories for some reason, and he's like going down to the boiler room in his New York City apartment building to destroy it, when he gets lured into an apartment with the movie Lost Boys.
Okay.
And a piece of pumpkin pie. Because right. pumpkin pie is his favorite. It's interesting. It goes from there. It's about witches. Kristen Ritter plays kind of this evil witch named Yasmin, I believe.
Okay.
So or no, she, not Yasmin. Nacha.
Kristen Ritter's delightful. Is she playing sort of, is it like wicked fun, or is she just, is she evil? What is
wicked fun a little bit. Okay, I made the joke of like, really don't trust the bee in apartment.
I've seen this rift, yes.
But I like the two kids. There's Alex and Yasmin. They sort of, they're both trapped there. They form a friendship.
Don't they have to like tell horror stories or something?
The kid has to write a horror story a day and recite it to Kristen Ritter's character.
This is the premise of like what the Arabian Nights story.
Yeah, it's playing with a lot of kind of tales and urban legends and things like that. There's a lot that can, I don't want to spoil because it does, there are some nice twists and
I will say this is a horror concept that I have not heard before. Would you call it a horror comedy, by the way?
Yeah, I'd like a light horror. Honestly, okay. R.L. Stein wouldn't be, like, super far from it.
I gotcha.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I saw this a poster for it, and I saw Kristen Ritter, who I was always like, so I was curious to check it out. You would recommend?
This one I would recommend.
Okay, all right.
It's on Netflix's, like, better side of things.
Okay, all right.
You know, because they don't have a huge pedigree.
All right. And then The Fog.
So I have not seen this movie in years. And for the longest time, I couldn't find it anywhere. And then I was like, Dave, let me have your copy.
And I had a copy because it's one of my favorite horror movies.
Yep.
We should just real quick clarify, this is the, I believe, 1980 version of The Fog, not the shitty remake from the 2000s.
I kind of want to watch the shitty remake of the 2000s just to see why they thought it was a great one to remake.
Well, I've heard people, like, theoretically, I don't see anything wrong with, like, taking the premise and remaking it other than, like, I think it's actually, like, a pretty good, great movie as it is. But, like, sure, the premise could be adapted.
Yeah.
But I heard it was, like, one of the worst adaptations.
I'm sure.
Like I think it's, like, just schlocky jump scares and all that.
And you know, like, the lead in it is Tom Welling.
Well, that's not a great start.
No.
And I don't, like, hate Tom Welling, but it's just, like, maybe you don't anchor with him.
I mean, I think that wasn't his, like, Smallville height.
Yeah. So let's, so Nick, tell us what the premise of The Fog from 1980 is. This is a John Carpenter movie.
It is?
And it was, like, his kind of follow-up to Halloween, right? I think.
Did this happen?
Halloween was like, 1978.
Okay.
So this would have been right then and before The Thing, for instance, which was 82.
So I thought it had a really good premise. It's like, I'm just going to read it because I don't want to screw it up.
Yeah.
So strange things begin to occur as a tiny California coastal town prepares to commemorate its centenary. Basically they're just about to celebrate this thing and weird fog starts to pour in. Between the hours of, like, midnight and 1 to start with.
It's not a singular event. It's something strange happening over the course of the week or two leading up to the event. And it's an ensemble cast,
but
the lead is Adrienne Barbeau, who was kind of a known beauty of the 80s. Not in a lot of, like, serious movies, but she was, like, in Creepshow. And, she was Rodney Dangerfield's shrewish wife in Back to School.
But she was also in, like, Escape from New York.
She was in Escape from New York. She was in some Carpenter joints.
Wasn't she in the original Swamp Thing?
She was. And, like, actually is pretty good in this.
Yeah, she plays a radio disc jockey.
Yeah, doing, like, the late-night, easy-listening lighthouse beat.
Yeah.
To telling people what the weather out for the fishermen is going to be.
But she has a son, and she's a single parent.
And who else do we have in here?
Hal Holbrook plays Father Malone, who's, like,
an alcoholic priest.
Alcoholic priest.
Then we've got the mayor of the town.
Who's Janet Leigh.
Right, Janet Leigh from
Psycho.
From Psycho, she was the lead in Psycho, ostensibly.
And then some people you would recognize, like Tom Atkins.
He's in a lot of John Carpenter stuff.
He was in Escape from New York, but he was also in Lethal Weapon.
Okay.
A few things you would recognize.
And a Jamie Lee Curtis in a sort of minor but notable role.
Yeah, she plays like a hitchhiker that Tom Atkins picks up and...
They hook up
and she kind of is along for the ride and she feels like she is like... the person causing all this crazy because like oh, that's weird right. things like, when like she happened came into to her. Town, yeah,
she I actually weirdly thought that their relationship, even though it's like seems like it's a one night stand kind of thing, is kind of nice. Like he's looking yeah. through her like art sketchbook later on with her, and he's like, "Oh, I want to buy this one. This is so good." And like he's.
I think this does what I think all good horror should and build up the characters.
Yeah,
you get to know these characters pretty well, and you get to know the place. And the place is such a... There are shots in here that are just straight up gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. It is one of... For atmosphere, I think it's one of the best horror movies that there is. And it starts with a really creepy ghost story that's yeah, told on the beach.
Told by a campfire by an elderly man.
Yeah, an old, like seaman guy.
Yeah.
But yes, like, without saying too much, there's these things in the fog that, like, are shambling zombie-like humans... that appear at times and will, like, you know, kill you with, like, hooks
yep.
and stuff like that. And
knock on doors a lot.
Yeah. And there was actually kind of a neat backstory to it.
Yeah.
That has to do with the town's history. So there's, like, a neat gothic story with reveals. And this being John Carpenter, there's, like, a pretty ratcheted up ending with, like, major threats. It goes from being, like, oh, spooky things are happening in the town. The weird, like... You know that scene with the gas pumps and yep. all that stuff? Yep. Weird stuff happening?
Yeah, like, the glass exploding out of, like, their car windows.
At a certain, like, at 3 a.m. Yeah, or whatever. Yeah,
it's kind of strange. I also will say that the score is great. Did he actually do the score?
Yeah, that's full John Carpenter, and I think one of his best scores. But it's like it's a creepy movie.
It is.
Nick, the scene I'm thinking of is one where she's listening to demo reels at the lighthouse, yes. like at the radio station. And, like, a piece of wood that her...
The driftwood that the kid found. Yeah,
her kid found some driftwood. And the driftwood is just sitting near the recorder or whatever, or the radio. Basically the recording equipment. And just water starts to pool in, mm-hmm. like, some writing on it. And it's, like, it's as if it's a plank from the ship that, like, sunk 100 years ago or whatever. And it spills onto, like, the electronic equipment, and these weird voices start coming out of it. Some really cool ideas.
I was a very big fan of the autopsy scene.
Yeah, yeah, that's a very tense scene.
It is. It's really done, and it kind of circumvents expectations a little bit, too. Mm-hmm. I just think it was a really good movie, and it is available right now on Amazon Prime. So if you're in the
movie... Go see a good 80s horror movie.
So you didn't even need to borrow
DVD. I know. Well, for the longest time, I've been looking for it. And
try to devalue me.
You couldn't.
I'll kill you with a hook.
You couldn't find it. You couldn't buy it. So yeah. I was wondering if, like, Carpenter had it off the table or if, like, was negotiating.
He was so sickened by what they did with the remake that he's like, I'm just going to hide this.
Never again.
But I think upon watching this, is my second favorite Carpenter film. Well,
he's got his highs are very high.
I mean, Halloween
thing. They Live.
Yeah, the big ones are big. I'm not going to quite put Prince of Darkness up there.
Ooh, I like Prince of Darkness,
but it is really good.
Yeah,
I think.
There's at the Mouth of Madness.
And the Mouth of Madness.
It's like
yeah.
an Escape from New York for me.
I don't think by the three of like the Thing, but Halloween, and now this. I actually think
it
this
is actually
kind of...
the one that I watch the most, even more than the Thing and stuff like that. And the Thing is like I would say a better movie, but. I watch this one the most because it's like particular eerie seaside town vibe is way up my alley.
You know where you're headed.
It's a lighthouse.
There's
movie.
A lighthouse in it.
Yes, it has
but
a lighthouse.
It doesn't really go for like the body horror of like the Thing. The Thing is like such a.
It is in its way a ghost story.
Yeah.
It has some violence because Carpenter does not do like just spooky ghosts. They are murderous ghosts, and ghosts isn't even quite the right way to describe what they are.
Carpenter does quiet really well.
Yeah.
Because even Halloween, where it is about a person, like, murdering, he doesn't
He's
murder...
He's very suspenseful, actually. He's almost as much suspense as he is horror.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. Yeah.
And the Thing is, you know, like...
That's just like...
It's suspense with moments of sheer fucking insanity.
yep.
Dave, my Cyberpunk Casablanca script, my Rick character actually is a hitman, but he operates out of a lighthouse.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I'm trying to...
I might watch an episode or two, I guess.
Sucker for lighthouses.
All right. The last thing I want to talk about, we're going to talk around a little bit because Dave has not seen it, and I think we both believe he should, is a movie called The Ritual.
Yep.
Came out in 2018, I want to say.
I think that's right.
That was modern times.
And it is about a series of four British friends who go on a lad's holiday to Sweden? No. Norway?
That sounds like Midsummer.
A group of college friends reunite for a trip to the forest but encounter something.
Yeah. So these guys go to the forest. Something traumatic happened to one of them. That relates to their friend group. That happens in the very early part of the movie. And they're dealing with the psychological impact of that while also being on this camping holiday where some of them don't want to be camping, which I can relate to because I wouldn't want to go camping. And then things start to go wrong and it seems like they may be being stalked by something.
Yeah. I think I watched this because of Robert James Collier, who is one of the actors in it. He was on Downton Abbey.
Okay.
In a pretty big role. So this was kind of an interesting...
This was really good. I like... They take their time setting everything up, they build the characters up, and then they throw them into all the horror stuff, and it's very well shot, it's very creepy, their designs are really good, and this is based on a book, and the guy who does the book there, Netflix is doing another one of his books in a couple weeks called No One Gets Out Alive, which we watched the trailer for a couple weeks ago.
Well, so this one is also directed by David Bruckner, who I guess worked on VHS, which I have not seen.
Let me see VHS. I've heard that's good.
He also did Southbound, which is another one I kind of wanted to watch, which is... He does a lot of vignette stuff.
Okay.
But then his most recent one, The Night House, which is the Rebecca Hall-led horror movie that was just in theaters, is getting really rave reviews, and I really want to watch that.
Well, all my horror fans really seem to enjoy this, and then when I watched it, I was very pleased with it.
Yeah,
it's very good. There's a lot of good mood. It's a real... They must have actually shot this in, like, the forest.
Yeah.
It looks lush and beautiful and creepy.
Yeah, there's a little bit of the kind of Blair Witch, lost in the forest kind of vibe to it.
There's also... You know how in horror you usually get to a point where you're like, hey, these people have never seen a horror movie, they should get out of here. This, because they are basically, they're on a hike, and they are, like, out away from civilization, when things start to happen, there's literally, they have no choice. It's either go through or get killed. Like, there's not, like, a smarter move they could have done.
Right.
They're kind of trapped, which is very smart and is good for someone like me who doesn't want to go camping anyway to reinforce. Don't go camping or horrible things might happen to you. So anyway, no Rogues Gallery lads vacation, I guess, to the forest of Norway.
Nick and I will go on a lads vacation.
Okay, yeah. Right. Well, hope you survive the experience.
I also want to throw out one thing, and I know Randy's behind in it, and I'm not going to talk about it other than to suggest people go watch this current season of American Horror Story.
It is really good.
It is probably one of their best.
Yep.
I usually find myself falling off of it midway through the season. Yep. They're doing kind of a unique thing where this is a double feature, so there's going to be 6 episodes is one story, another 6 episodes is another story.
Yep.
This story that focuses on kind of a weird pill that...
Weird pill that makes creative people... into vampires.
Sort of.
Yeah, yeah. It's very weird.
But the performances by, like, Evan Peters and Sarah Paulson...
Evan Peters is great.
Francis Conroy is amazing.
Discount Matt Bomer, who's the lead.
Finn Wittrock is doing some exceptional work in this.
I still believe the name Finn Wittrock to be made up, and he is a clone. He is a clone of Matt Bomer.
No, because we know because they were in the same season before.
Clone, Nick.
CG, huh?
Finn Wittrock. That's not a... That's a made-up name.
Are you trying to do the whole Ted Lasso thing where that guy is just a CGI version?
Yes, he's just a CGI. No, I'm going with the John Oliver. There are no Olsen twins. There's one Olsen. They move very quickly.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's very true.
Yeah. Anyway, I also recommend American Horror Story this
season.
Yeah,
if you're in this October, you want horror, American Horror Story is hitting it pretty hard this time.
All right, that is it for us this week. We'll be back with more next week, and until that time,
yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.